You are listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. I'm Phil Mack, and this is my winter season celebration version of it anyway. Different take, different, you know, holidays. It's nice for a change, you know, to get to different styles of music, too. Started things off with Remember Love on Christmas Day by Thornetta Davis. Then the After Christmas song by Bob Malone from the Christmas Collection. New Year's Party. There we go. Got some New Year's in there. George Bedard and the Kingpins from the album Triple Crown. I'll send that one out to D Stringer over in Garden City. Then a really, really interesting song there. There's Twists and Turns in there by Annie and Rod Capps from their album When They Fall. Happy New Year. And then wrap things up with Catherine Muller, M-O-L-L-E-R, from her album Green Sleeves and Puddin' Pies. Maybe some of you had some Puddin' Pies this year. I don't know. I haven't had one ever. Sounds interesting, though. The medley, it was a medley of songs. The Seasons started things off. Then we went to the Mummers' Jig and Reel. And then The Sound of Sleet Ale is Dear. Well, okay. So anyway, I hope you've had some fun listening to my winter season celebration show. And continue to listen throughout this holiday season for other shows here on WHFR as part of this winter season celebration. Have fun whatever you do. Just don't overdo it. And I got to tell you, we have the new year coming in, a new decade. So I'm going out on this song here, you know, going out dancing. This is by Michelle Pollace, a tune called New Beginning. P-O-L-L-A-C-E. All right, I want to thank everybody for listening. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. But you can only take care of each other if you take care of yourself first. See you next time, especially Monday nights with Primetime Thematic and Phil Mack, 8 to 10 p.m.
This is WHFR Dearborn. The following show has been pre-recorded.
You are trapped in the dark cellar of your home. Beside you is the murdered body of your wife. And above at the front door are your friends looking for you, tracking you down, cutting off your escape.
Escape, produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and carefully contrived to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight we escape to a university town in England and a household where hate holds sway as we listen to John Collier's famous story, Back for Christmas.
Yes, my dear.
What on earth are you doing down here in the cellar?
Why, just a little digging.
And why, may I ask, have you chosen this day of all days to dig up the cellar floor?
Why, I thought as the weather has been so damp, this would be an excellent time to plant my devil's garden.
Devil's garden? Whatever nonsense is that?
Oh, that's my little joke about it. You see, I've managed to secure some of the spores of several unclassified wild orchids. In their natural state, they bloom under damp masses of leaf mold. The Araucanian Indians call them devil flowers because they appear to bloom under the ground.
Well, I'm sure the Araucanian Indians will be very interested if you succeed in growing these ridiculous flowers under the cellar floor. Whom else it'll interest, I can't imagine. What's that terrible smell?
Why, that's the leaf mold, my dear. Chemically identical with the earth blanket they grow under in the wild state. I really should line the pit with concrete so as to prevent seepage from this foreign soil. But I don't suppose there'll be time for it now.
There certainly will not be time for it. Do you realize that we're sailing for America a week from today, and you've made no arrangements whatever? Unless you call digging a hole in the cellar making arrangements. I certainly don't. Devil's garden, indeed. Sometimes I think you're going soft in the head, Herbert.
Well, I suppose it's inconsiderate of me. But, you see, I've been wanting to try this experiment for a long time. But what with my lectures and seminars at the university, there never seemed to be time.
Well, there certainly isn't any time for it now. I suppose you've forgotten I made an appointment for you at the barber's this afternoon.
Oh, must I shave off my beard, Hermione?
Now, we've been all through that. Of course you must. They don't wear beards in America. Go and get your jacket on and do as I tell you.
Yes, Hermione.
And don't forget to take your umbrella. It looks like rain.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, don't look so put upon, Herbert. Someone has to plan things in this house, or you'll never even get to the university in time for your lectures, much less make arrangements for a trip to America.
I know, but what of my specimens?
There'll be plenty of time to plant your precious devil's garden when you get home from America. We're not going to be gone forever, you know. We'll be back here for Christmas.
Yes, of course. Back for Christmas. I'd forgotten.
Well, try to remember it. And if you can't do that, just do as I tell you. I've been making the plans in this house for 20 years. And if there's any digging to be done, I'll manage that as well. You understand, Herbert?
Yes, Hermione.
Good. You have just 20 minutes to clean this mess up down here and keep your appointment at the barber's. And when you finish there, I want you to come straight home.
Why, I wanted to stop at Miss Markham's and pick up some books I ordered.
Well, all right. But don't loiter there the whole afternoon, browsing over those old books the way you usually do. Now hurry and clear up this rubbish. Get rid of that smelly stuff. And no more digging, mind you.
Yes, Hermione. Yes, Hermione. How many years have I been saying that? 10 years? 15? 20? Clear up the rubbish. Yes, Hermione. Don't forget your umbrella. Yes, Hermione. Do this, do that. Yes, Hermione. Yes, yes, yes. How much longer can I stand this?
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Miss Markham.
Why, it's Professor Carpenter, isn't it?
You didn't recognize me.
Oh, you look ever so much younger without the beard. 20 years at least.
20 years?
Oh, you'll be glad to know those books you ordered have finally arrived.
Hmm? Books?
Phytotomy of phalloid gametophytes and coniferous shrubs of North America. Those are the ones you ordered, aren't they?
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you. You're very kind, Miss Markham.
Why kind, Professor Carpenter?
Well, not many young ladies in bookshops would go out of their way to look up rare books for an old professor of botany.
Oh, why, you're not old, Professor Carpenter. Really, you look... Oh, and besides, I adore botany. It's my particular hobby.
Oh, really? Well, you never told me that before, Miss Markham.
Oh, I was afraid to. You were so... Oh, so imposing with a beard and all.
Well, I... You might be interested in some specimens of alpine polyanthes that were sent to me by a friend in Switzerland.
Switzerland? I used to go there for my holidays before the war.
You like Switzerland?
Oh, I love every part of it. The lakes, the mountains, the beautiful spring flowers. Oh, especially the flowers.
Oh, yes. It seems we have quite a lot in common, Miss Markham. I'm sorry we haven't talked before.
Oh, I am, too. It is all the fault of the beard, I suppose.
Miss Markham, forgive me if this sounds foolish, but I feel that shaving off my beard is the most important thing I've done for 20 years.
Oh, it is. I'm sure it is. I'm ashamed that I've been so distant with you all the time. Oh, there were times when I almost spoke up. Times when you came in here, tied after day with your students at the university. Oh, you seem so alone. The way I'm alone in the world. I'd like to have asked you to stay a while and talk with me. But some way or other, I wound up giving you your change and letting you go on your way.
You say you're all alone in the world?
Since my father died.
Well, did you never think of marrying?
Well, my father was a very remarkable man. I never found anyone who seemed to measure up to what he led me to expect of men. And then the war came.
Miss Markham,
It's been so long since anyone called me by my first name. I'd like you to, if you don't mind. It's Marion.
Marion.
And yours?
Herbert.
How long had you been alone, Herbert?
Alone?
Oh, I knew you were a widower, of course, the first time I saw you.
A widower?
Oh, I can always tell. There's a certain sadness in a man's eyes. A sweet sadness, I think, when he's been married and then...
A widower. I never thought of it in quite that way.
Oh, perhaps I shouldn't be talking like this. But I've often wondered what she must have been like. Your wife, I mean.
Hermione? Not an easy woman to forget. Very strong. Always managing things. The house, my wardrobe, my friends. When we dined at a restaurant, she even ordered my food. She was always managing things. You might say she managed herself to death.
Oh, poor woman. She must have loved you very much. But she needn't have put herself out so. It's plain to see you don't need things managed for you. You need companionship, I think. Someone sympathetic with your work. But the last thing on earth you need is a manager.
How well you put it. The last thing on earth. That's the first time I thought of it, of course. But suddenly a whole new world opened up before my eyes. Marion and America and no more of Hermione's planning my life for me. By the time I got home, my mind was working overtime.
Last. You certainly took long enough about it. What are you looking so pleased about?
I don't really know. Getting rid of the beard, perhaps. I feel 20 years younger.
You look even smaller. Your face looks triangular or something. I'd forgotten your chin was so weak. Oh, but never mind that. You can grow it back soon enough after Christmas. Where are you going?
Down to the cellar. I just bought this electric lantern, and I thought I'd put it away down there.
Now, whatever possessed you to buy a thing like that?
I don't know. I'd rather like this lantern. It might come in handy. Who knows?
Now, Herbert, don't start digging down there again. I've 100 things to do, putting the house in order before we leave. I want you to carry those boxes upstairs for me.
Yes, Hermione.
And if you're going down to the cellar, take this along and stuff it into the furnace.
But this is my old bathrobe. I may need it.
Oh, nonsense. I've got you a new one. Get rid of it. And don't start puttering down there with that devil's garden or whatever you call it.
I'm through digging, my dear. I think the pit is quite deep enough now. For my devil's garden. It would all have to be carefully planned, of course. Just as carefully planned as Hermione was planning the trip to America. We both went about our respective engagements as the days passed. I spent all the time I could with Marion, and finally she consented. And then it was the last day, the big day, the day we were to sail for America.
Operator! Operator, are you there? I'm still waiting on that call to Salisbury. Oh, well, put them on quickly. Hello? Is this Paul Holt and Sons? Mrs. Herbert Carpenter here. Did you receive my letter? Oh, good. Now remember, we'll be back for Christmas, and I want the job done without fail. What's that? Oh, no, I'm sure he doesn't suspect anything. Send the bill to me in New York as I instructed you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, there you are, Herbert. Where have you been?
Back stairs. I dismissed the servants.
Dismissed the servants? But I've asked some friends in to a farewell tea. Go and tell them it's a mistake.
I'm afraid it's too late now. They've packed and gone.
Oh, you have messed up things properly. How many times have I told you to leave things to me? I make the plans around here.
Yes, Hermione.
You'll have to do better than this when I plan the trip home, or we'll never in the world be back for Christmas.
Back for Christmas, back for Christmas. Must you keep saying that?
Well, why not? We are coming back for Christmas, aren't we?
Supposing I were offered a professorship in one of those wealthy American universities.
Nonsense. Americans care nothing for botany.
Luther Burbank was an American.
Well, that's different. What have you ever done except muck around in the dirt with a lot of roots and tubers?
They've asked me to lecture. That means something.
Of course they asked you to lecture. Americans will pay to hear any foreigner deliver a lecture once. Now, there's no use getting yourself in a state about this, Herbert. No doubt this extra money will come in very handy when we arrive back
for Christmas.
Precisely. And it's no good your making a joke of it. Heaven knows where you'd be today if I hadn't got a sense of time.
Yes, my dear Hermione.
And since you've been so foolish as to dismiss the servants, you may empty the ashtrays and straighten up this room while we're waiting for the guests to arrive. I'm going upstairs to change. Call me when they get here.
Yes, Hermione. Yes, Hermione, yes, Hermione. For 20 years, Hermione, always so right, thought of everything. Well, not quite everything. She's dressing now. Safe to call Marion. Oh, if Marion were to change her mind now, if she had any idea I was not a widower. Hello? Hello? Marion? Herbert? No. No, my darling. Nothing's wrong. My plans are the same. Unless you've changed. Oh, good. We'll meet in New York as we planned. Yes, yes, I do love you, my darling.
Herbert!
I'm sorry I can't talk any longer. Yes, I'll meet you in New York a week from tomorrow without fail. Goodbye till then.
Herbert, were you talking on the phone just now?
Yes, Hermione.
Whoever was it?
Freddie Sinclair, of course.
Oh, didn't I hear you say something about meeting somebody in New York?
Why, yes. Old Freddy said he might possibly get out to America before we leave, and I said, of course, we'd meet him there if he decides to go.
That seems very peculiar. But then all of your friends are peculiar.
Yes, Hermione.
And just look at your jacket. Have you been digging in that cellar again?
Yes, Hermione.
Well, there's no need for it. You can't possibly get that Devil's Garden thing finished. Go and change your clothes before the guests arrive.
Yes, Hermione.
Oh, never mind. I see somebody coming up the walk now. Go and let them in.
Yes, Hermione.
Herbert.
Yes, my dear.
Look out the window. There's Professor and Mrs. Hewitt. But who's that with them?
Why,
precisely. Freddie Sinclair. Peculiar. You should have been talking to him on the phone not 3 minutes ago. And now here he is.
Yes. Yes, isn't it? But then, as you say, Hermione, all of my friends are peculiar.
Not half so peculiar as you. Digging in the cellar an hour before we leave for America. Just look at yourself. And now that I think of it...
Yes, Hermione?
Oh, never mind. Go and let them in.
You were going to ask me something, Hermione. About the hole I'm digging in the cellar.
Oh, good heavens. Stop rolling your eyes about that way. One would think you were digging a grave down there instead of a storage bin.
Yes, Hermione.
What's that?
I said yes, Hermione.
Oh, bother, open the door and stop saying yes, Hermione.
I think, my dear, I've said it for the last time. Back for Christmas. Hermione was so positive we would be back for Christmas. That last afternoon, pouring tea for a few friends who had come in to say last-minute farewells, she kept reiterating.
Oh, I promise you, Mrs. Hewitt. Remember, we absolutely must have you with us for Christmas.
Oh, we'll be back.
It's not absolutely certain, of course.
Herbert, what do you mean it's not certain? Of course it's certain.
After all, Herbert, old boy, you've contracted to lecture for only 3 months. Quite right, but then, of course, anything may happen.
Oh. Herbert adores being unpredictable. Now, what other man would dig a great hole in the cellar on the very day he was leaving for America? A hole in the cellar?
Yes.
He's going to put some unclassified wild orchids down there. A devil's garden, if you please. Sounds mysterious. That's Herbert. Though he's really quite simple once you find out what he's up to. Now, take that telephone call he put through to you a few moments before you arrive, Freddy.
To me?
Yes. Herbert wanted to surprise me about your plan to meet us in New York next month. That's why he called, of course, to ask you not to mention it.
But, my dear Hermione, Herbert couldn't possibly have telephoned me within the past hour. I've been walking in the park since 3.
He didn't telephone you.
Well, how could he? And as for my going to America...
Oh, no.
Come, Freddy. You may as well own up. Hermione has found me out again. But Herbert, old chap, I really don't understand.
There. You see what a poor liar Herbert makes. He's red as a beetroot. Aren't you ashamed of yourself, Professor? Stringing poor Hermione along like that. And as for you, Freddy, I'm furious you said nothing to us about going to America.
But look here, old girl. I've been trying to tell everyone that I have no...
Oh, stuff and nonsense. The game's gone on long enough. Perhaps Herbert's merely planning a surprise for me.
Yes, let's leave it at that, my dear.
Well, we must start getting ready. It was marvelous of you to come in to say goodbye. And don't worry about Herbert's little jokes. I will bring him back for Christmas. You may rely on it.
They all believed her. For years, she'd been promising me for dinner parties, garden parties, committees. And the promises had always been kept. This time they wouldn't be. I'd seen to that. The servants were gone for good. The farewells all said. I had timed to the minute how long it would take to fill in the hole in the cellar. In my devil's garden. Upstairs in the bedroom I undressed, folded my clothes over a chair and put on my old bathrobe. Then I opened the door into Hermione's room.
Are you ready, Herbert?
Hermione, have you a moment to spare?
Of course, my dear. I've just finished.
Then do come in here for a moment. There's something rather extraordinary here.
Good heavens, Herbert. What are you lounging about in that filthy old bathrobe for? I told you to put it into the furnace.
I shall do it today, yes. I really will. I promise.
Well, high time. Now, what is it you want to show me?
In the bathroom here. Just look. Who in the world do you suppose dropped a gold chain down the bathtub drain?
Nobody has, of course. Nobody wears such a thing in this house.
Then what's it doing there?
I don't see anything.
Here. I'll hold this flashlight for you. If you lean right over, you can see it shining deep down.
Oh, such a lot of nonsense. Just was a... I don't see it, Herbert.
Go on looking, Hermione. In just a moment.
Herbert, I absolutely refuse to wait. Herbert, what are you doing? Take your hands off my neck.
I will, Hermione, just as soon as I finish the arrangements for my trip to America.
What are you talking about?
You thought you were the only one who could plan things, didn't you, Hermione? Well, I've been making some plans of my own this past week. In exactly 2 minutes, you'll be dead, Hermione. You see, 2 minutes. I've planned it very accurately.
You'll never get away with it. Let me go.
I thought you'd say that, but I will get away with it. You won't mind the smell of the leaf mold down in the cellar when I take you there today.
Yes.
That's where you're going, Hermione. Into my devil's garden that annoyed you so much. The soil is full of clay. It won't settle too much. In a month or so, it won't even look as if it had been dug up.
My friends, they all expect me back for Christmas. They don't hear from me, they'll wonder. If I don't come back, they'll start asking questions.
Oh, no, they won't. Because you'll write them letters, Hermione. On the typewriter, as you always do. They'll be signed H in that neat, cryptic way you always sign your notes to your friends. No.
It won't work, Herbert. You never were any good at planning things.
Oh, but I've changed, my dear. I've learned from watching you all these years.
The lecture people in America, they'll expect you to be traveling with your wife.
I will be traveling with my wife. But her name will not be Hermione.
Yes.
Fortunately, they've never met you. I'll write a few letters home for you. Then fewer and fewer. Write letters signed with my own name. Always expecting to get back, but never quite able to. Keep the house 1 year and then another and another. They'll get used to it. I might even come back alone in a year or two and clear it up properly. Say you died in America. Nobody will ever suspect you're lying under the floor of the cellar in this very house.
But it won't work, I tell you. That pit you dug in the cellar...
I can assure you, my dear Hermione, it'll serve its purpose well. Sorry, my dear. I've got to get this done on schedule. You have just 5 seconds to say your prayers.
But you must listen. The cellar. Here. Don't do it, Herbert! Herbert!
The water cut off at the main as I knew she would order it. She was so thorough, but so was I. Strangulation. Nothing to wash up. The electric current shut off exactly at 1 o'clock, just as she ordered it. She thought of everything. So did I. My nice new electric lantern. Plenty of light to work by in the cellar. The old bathrobe she wanted me to throw away came in handy now if there should be any chance bloodstain. Then into the fire with it afterwards, the last evidence of my devil's garden. It was going well. Still an hour till I had to leave for the boat. The hold was almost filled. No. Oh, no, not at all. Go away, please. Whoever you are, go away. Did I lock the front door? If it's the Wallingfords. Oh, no, no. Go away. Go away.
I say, Herbert, old thing.
Just keep calm, quiet. They won't look down in the cellar. Keep calm. They'll go away.
What dickens can they be?
Oh, the car's there.
Maybe they popped round to the Dells.
Oh, it must be.
Oh, the shots, maybe. Something at the last minute.
Oh, not the baronet.
Should I shout?
Oh, don't. Might not be careful.
No harm in a shout, my love.
No, Rick's coming our way. Hermione said they wouldn't be till 7.
Oh, all right. Only I want a last drink with old Herbert. It'd be hurt, you know.
All right, let's hurry. It'll be back by 6:30.
6:30. Oh, there's still time. After that, it was easy. Put the finishing touches on the Devil's Garden, dress fast, get out of the house before 6:30, take the boat trade to Southampton and board the ship for America. All according to plan. Hermione's plan. My wife is indisposed. She'll be taking her meals in our stateroom.
Oh, for the whole voyage?
Yes, for the whole voyage.
Well, I trust your wife is feeling better this morning, Professor Carpenter.
Yes, a little. Not yet well enough to leave her cabin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, by the way, here's a copy of the radiogram you sent for your wife last evening.
Oh, thank you. I'll just check it over. I say, look here.
What is it? Did the typist make a mistake?
No. No, nothing important. She can correct it later. For a moment, I had the feeling that Hermione had been leaning over my shoulder again, correcting what I'd written, as she always did. I had written a radiogram to Professor Hewitt and his wife. Haven't been out of my cabin the whole beastly trip. Herbert, well, we now doubt we will be back for Christmas. The copy read, we no doubt will be back for Christmas. Exactly what Hermione would have written. The rest of the voyage was uneventful. And Marion and I met in New York and were married just as we'd planned. Just as we'd planned. Professor and Mrs. Carpenter, we have reservations, I believe.
Oh, yes, we've been expecting you, sir. Boy, take Professor and Mrs. Carpenter's luggage up to their suite. You know, Mrs. Carpenter, you're quite a surprise. Your letter reserving the rooms was so thorough, I was expecting an older, more forbidding sort of person, frankly, ma'am.
Oh, no. As a matter of fact, we're just married. But my letter reserving the room...
I wrote the letter, my dear, and signed it Mrs. Herbert Carpenter. Purely a joke.
Oh, what a cunning old fox you are, Herbert.
Now that I think of it, I am, rather.
Oh, I almost forgot. There's a letter for you, Mrs. Carpenter.
A letter for me? I wonder who knows...
Well, we shall find out in good time. Come along, my dear. We're keeping the boy waiting. Nothing like a cold, brisk shower to put a man to rights.
Herbert, this letter...
Oh, yes, the letter. Dry my ear, will you, dear?
It seems to be a bill of some sort from a building contract in Salisbury.
Mm.
Oh, bother. Dry your own hair.
Oh, thank you, my sweet. Let's see this bill or whatever it is.
It's very puzzling. Herbert?
Hmm?
You were a widower, weren't you? I mean, her man isn't still alive.
I can assure you she is not. Let's have that letter. Oh. Dear madam, this is to acknowledge your order together with the key. Together with the keys to your house in Launceston Place. Our men had no difficulty in finding the place where your husband had begun the excavation in the cellar, but apparently changed his mind at the last moment and filled it in again. Oh, no.
What is it, Herbert?
Our men will begin digging tomorrow, and you may rest assured that it will be a professional job and will be completed in ample time for your surprise Christmas present to your husband. We are happy to be conspirators with you in this thoughtful gesture and hope that Professor Carpenter will be pleased at the results of our work on what he so quaintly calls his Devil's Garden. Very truly yours, Paul Holt and Sons Contractors.
What does it mean, Herbert?
It means that Hermione was right. I will be back for Christmas.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought you Back for Christmas by John Collier. Adapted for radio by Robert Tallman, with Paul Frees as Herbert, Eleanor Audley as Hermione, and Marta Mitrovich as Marion. Music is conceived and conducted by Cy Fuhrer. Next week...
You are lost in a London fog, exhausted and frantic, unsure if the figures looming around you are real or creatures of your fear, and behind you, pursuing you, intent on killing you, lurks a murderer from whom you must escape.
Next week, we escape with Algernon Blackwood's ghostly story, Confession. Good night, then, until this same time next week, when again we offer you Escape. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is WHFR Dearborn. The following show has been pre-recorded.
The Pet Milk Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Fibber McGee and Molly, transcribed with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, Dick LeGrand, Cliff Arquette, Ed Begley, Jeanette Nolan, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The show is written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie and directed by Max Hutto, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. The Wistful Vista Post Office, loaded down with Christmas mail, has signed up some extra men with cars this morning to deliver packages. And standing in line awaiting final instructions, we find a man who is alert and eager. A man who is ambitious and hardworking. And right between them, a man who is Mr. McGee of Fibber McGee and Molly.
Outside the railing there now, Molly. This is for employees only.
I still can't see why I can't stand in there with you. My
my goodness, I'm not going to bother him.
It's the regulations, postal rules. Here comes the postmaster.
All right, but my goodness.
All right, ma'am, attention, please. Everybody set? Number 7 here?
Yeah.
Number 12?
Yeah.
Number 14? Where's the extra man for room 14?
That's you, McGee. You're number 14.
Here, sir. Number 14. Trevor McGee, extra part-time carrier of the United States Mail Special Delivery Department, reporting for duty, sir.
All right. Got your bag with you, McGee?
Here, sir.
My gosh, he don't mean you, Molly. He means my mail bag for small packages.
Oh. Yes, sir. I'm ready, sir. My car is outside.
Good. Are you loaded?
Never touch a drop, sir.
He means, is your car loaded, McGee?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. The packages are all loaded, sir.
All right. Now, you men know the regulations. That's... Remember, no fare peeking into loose packages. No parcel marked fragile shall be dropped more than twice. And no passengers are allowed in your car.
You hear that, Molly? You might as well go home. No passengers can ride with me.
I'll drive. You can be the passenger because...
And here's a new regulation about dogs. It says, and I quote, if any dog shall bite the mail carrier 3 times... we shoot the carrier. All right, ma'am. Hit the road. Hit the road.
Come on, McGee. Come on. This delivering packages is fun, McGee. I'm glad I came with you, even if it is against the rules, because they really...
Here's our next stop. Gotta get them brakes fixed. Let's see, 1422 Oak Street. Give me that brown package there. Thanks.
You know, I just love Christmas week, McGee. I mean, everyone feels so good. The way their faces light up when you hand them a package.
Yeah, what do you want, McGee? Oh, hi, Jim. A package for you, boy. Sign here.
Okay.
And a very merry Christmas week to you, sir.
Yeah, what's merry about it? Taxes going higher, inflation coming, weather's lousy. Everything stinks, if you ask me.
Well, who was that?
Jim Kevel. He's the head of the Optimist Club. Likes to relax when he's off duty. The next stop is Ole Swenson's house because the top package is for Ole Swenson. So get in the car.
I hope you got a package for Dr. Gamble, too, because look who's coming. Dr. Gamble. Huh? Hello, Dr. Gamble.
Well, this is a nice surprise, Molly. Hello. And good day to you, Clodhead.
Hi, Satchel Searcher. What are you doing out in the middle of the day? Trying to drum up a few academic decorations for Christmas?
You know very well Dr. Gamble never operates unless he has to.
Oh, no. Did you know, kiddo, that at this time of year, Doc's hospital patients won't even go to sleep at night till they've pasted a label on themselves first?
What kind of a label?
Do not open till Christmas.
It's a lie and you know it.
Sure. It's a funny idea, though, ain't it?
Very. Mm. If you had a label on you, lump rump... It would read Parcel Post.
Parcel Post?
Yes, he's a fourth-class mail.
Speaking of mail, Balloon Bottom, I think I got a package for you down underneath that stack someplace. I'll drop it off at your house when it comes up on my route.
Well, yeah? Hey, that must be my new stethoscope, McGee.
Huh?
I've been waiting for that for weeks. Dig it out for me, will you?
I can't, Fatso. I got them packages all stacked.
Oh, come on. I need it. Look, I'll find it myself, McGee. Which side is it on? This side?
No, I don't know. Don't open that car door because that back seat's package is tighter than... No, don't. Oh, packages are tight.
Heavenly days, just like home.
Stupid. Now help me pick them up, Molly. Quick. Throw them back.
Gamble, you big... Here it is. My new stethoscope. Just drop it off at my house, McGee. I don't want to lug it around all day.
Here's Ole's house. Gotta get them brakes fixed. You got Ole's package?
I did have till you made that 3-point landing. Oh, yes, here's a couple of parcels for this block. the old-timer and...
Well, bring them all. Come on, Holy first.
Say, this package is from Sweden, McGee. Must be smorgasbord.
Yeah?
It's shaped like a 2x4. You know, smorgasbord, 2x4?
Yeah, I guess. Merry Christmas.
Hello, Ollie.
Well, hello, Mrs. Hello, McGee. Joyous Yuletide.
Same, Ollie. I got a package for you. Got a package from Sweden. Sign here.
Oh, thanks, McGee. Well, I see mittens come from Mama again. Every year, Mama sends mittens from Sweden.
Oh, that's very thoughtful of her, Ole.
Oh, sure. Mama thanks you, all right, for her needle is stuck.
Huh?
10 years ago on her birthday, I telephoned her. I say, school, Mama. And so she sends mittens. 63 pair we got now.
Well, that's very interesting, Ole, but I'm pretty busy today, boy. Post office. Christmas rush, you know.
Oh, I know what you mean, McGee. I worked in the Stockholm post office on Christmas myself. I tell you, we were snowed under.
With mail?
No, with snow. When it snows in Sweden, it just snows snow.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to carry the mail, though.
That's so.
I remember one time we had a big snowstorm and I wear tennis racket tanks on my feet.
Snowshoes?
No, you snowed snow, McGee. In Sweden, that you snow. So me and my brothers, we work all day, sometimes cleaning off the sidewalk with them big scoops, those big...
Snow shovels?
No, it you snow. And it snows in Sweden.
Yeah, well, you told us, Ole. It's snow. See, is your wife home? I'd like to say hello to her if she is.
Snow, she went shopping today, Mrs. Took all the kids out of the house. Listen.
I don't hear a sound, Ollie.
That's what I mean. Peace, ain't it wonderful? I didn't want you in, Mrs., but I'm having too much fun. Merry Christmas, both you fellas.
Well, so on. Well, we got no time to visit anyway. Well, come on, Molly. Whose is that package?
The old-timer. Right over here.
Oh.
It's from a Mr. Two-Gun Tadley.
Two-Gun Tadley. Oh, hi, old-timer.
Hello there, kids. Hi, daughter. Hi, Johnny.
Hello, Mr. Oldtimer.
Merry Christmas 6 days early to you, kids. Come in.
Oh, we can't, Oldtimer. We just brought you a package.
I seen you coming up the walk with it, Johnny. I says to myself, a Christmas present for me, I says. Oh, you shouldn't have done it, kids.
Well, we didn't done it.
Well, don't stand outside. Come on in and set a spell.
We can't. You see, we're delivering.
Well, I have to excuse the looks of my room, daughter. Clothesline and all.
Oh.
I was just wrenching out a few dainties.
I see you. That's quite a washing you got hung up here, boy. 4 shirts, 3 socks, 6 pipe cleaners, a sweater, 2 pairs of red. My gosh, you still wear them things, old-timer.
All the time, Johnny, except when I'm asleep.
That's so.
Some fellas sleep in them, but, well, here... Let me part them so you can get into the room, kids. Just walk in between them. There.
My goodness, I didn't know anybody wore red suspenders anymore except firemen. This is a nice place you have here, I think.
Well, glad you like it, daughter. Sit down.
Where?
Well, I sat here on the windowsill. Let me move them mineral oil bottles over. Oh, you kids bringing me a Christmas present 6 days early so I'd have plenty of time to buy you one. It kind of chokes me up.
But look, I got news for you, old-timer. The present is not from us. Look, it says on the package, it's from a Mr. Two-Gun Tadley in Tucson. You know him?
Two-Gun Tadley? Do I know him? Oh, good old Uncle Toogie. Now, give me a Johnny. I've been waiting for that package since Thanksgiving.
Watch it now. It's a little heavy.
Oh, well, give it here, Johnny.
Right there.
Uncle Toogie makes this out of cactus juice. Whoa.
Oh. Look at that. Oh, dear.
My gosh, I told you not to.
Oh. Well, kids, all I can say is Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Christmas isn't here yet.
Kids, for me, Christmas has come and went.
Billy Mills, the orchestra, and Play Ride.
Gosh, I'm getting wore out. This job ain't quite the snap I thought it was. How many packages we got rid of so far?
Well, as near as I can figure, dearie, we've rung 37 doorbells so far and delivered 4 packages.
On average.
You know, we should have brought an extra car just to put packages back in.
Yeah.
Ours is getting overloaded, dearie.
Oh, God, what's the matter with these people?
I don't know, but look, here's a big box for Mr. Wilcox. Maybe he'll take it.
No, he'd better take it. Hey, boy, that's heavy. You sure you can manage it? I'll ring the bell for you.
Father, I can ring it with my elbow.
Let's hit the back door and save time. Harlow will be out in the kitchen baking Christmas cookies with a pet milk recipe.
How do you know that?
A postal employee, Tootsie, is expected to know everything.
Come in! I'm out in the kitchen baking Christmas cookies from a pet milk recipe.
See what I mean?
Amazing. Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Well, hi, Molly. Hi, pal. Come here.
A package for you, Junior. Sign right here. Set it down, Molly.
Well, glad you stopped by, kids. Here, let me get the flour off my hands. Just baking a batch of cookies.
Mm-hmm.
They're from a Mary Lee Taylor recipe. And boy, it's so simple, even a man can bake them.
Sign right here, Junior. This is where you sign.
Oh, holiday cookies. They're wonderful. But aren't you going to need a little more flour on that board, Mr. Wilcox? They'll stick if you don't.
Oh, not the way I make them. They won't stick.
Sign for the package, Junior. Here's the receipt.
Say, you know what I do, Mr. Wilcox? I always mix the shortening and the sugar first.
Oh, those are just details, Molly.
Speaking of signs, Junior, do it here, will you? Sign the thing.
Now, just a minute, dearie.
Well, I want...
Do you have cookies in the oven, Mr. Wilcox? Because it's pretty high and
yikes! I got talking about pet and forgot them. Wow! Hot!
Watch it. Those pans will burn you.
Yeah, and speaking of pansel, Junior, take this pansel and sign this. Hey, Milky.
Yes, pal.
You want this package or not?
Who's it for?
You.
Me?
Yes.
Gee.
Sign.
Where?
Line.
There?
Right.
Right.
Happy Yule to you too, Mr. Wilcox.
Oh, thank you.
Get them brakes fixed. Oh, come on, this one's house. You got the package for this?
Yes. It's addressed to his wife, and I hope she's home because I've never met her.
Well, me either. Just lucky, I guess, but this time I hope I do get...
Oh, hello there, Mr. Wimple.
Hello, folks.
I got a package here, Wimp. It's addressed to Mrs. Wallace Wimple. She'll have to sign for it.
Mrs. Wallace? Oh, that's Sweetie Face, my big old wife.
Is she home, Wimp?
No, she's downtown shopping, Mr. McGee, for a new punching bag.
Oh, a punching bag. Is that a Christmas gift for you, Mr. Wimple?
Well, in a sense it is, yes. She'll start using it now instead. She says I'm getting so bony she keeps cutting her knuckles on me.
Pretty sharp character, are you, Wimp?
I have my point. Oh, dear, I was working on a Christmas poem today.
Oh, a Christmas poem. Read it to us, Mr. Wimple.
Well, all righty. It's called It's Pop.
It's Pop?
Yes. It goes... It's Pop who trims the Christmas tree while Mom spends all day shopping. He trims it gay and trims it bright while colored bulbs keep popping. But Christmas time, I think, was meant for children and for women, 'cause when the Christmas bills come in, it's Pop who gets the trimming. Bye, folks.
Dearie.
You said it.
Who's next?
Latrivia's house, right across the street here. Give me that big package on top. I got it.
Watch the curb.
Yeah.
That's it. Up the steps. Good.
Okay, ring the bell, will you? This is kind of heavy.
Wait, there's a little card stuck in the bell button. It says, bell out of order. Please use knocker. Signed, Mayor Latrivia.
Oh.
Hello there, Mr. Mayor.
Well, hello, Molly, McGee.
Hi, Latriv. What's the matter with the doorbell, boy? I could probably fix it with a bobby pin.
No, McGee, no, thank you, just the same. Nothing, really.
Tried to fix it?
No, it just won't stop ringing once it starts, so we don't use it. Come in, both of you.
Well, thanks, Latriv, but I can't. I got a package for you, special delivery. Sign right here.
Who is the package from, McGee?
Well, I don't know, but it's to you, so just sign.
Well, I've learned to be a little cautious about accepting packages that come anonymously.
Oh, well, this one came parcel post, Mr. Mayor.
This package is not for me. This is addressed to F.R. Agile.
That's fragile.
I knew you'd know it, but I didn't think McGee would.
Oh, Patui. Guess I know a fragile sign when I see it. Go ahead and sign the receipt, Latriv. I'll take a look at your doorbell button here.
No, don't fool with that.
Sometimes if you just wrap it with your fist and it loosens up. Just give it a few... Don't it?
Oh, great Scott. Now I'll have to crawl under the house again and tear the wires loose. Merry Christmas, Molly, and excuse me.
Okay.
Hey, you forgot the package.
Now, put the package back in the car, dearie. You know, this whole thing is getting awful silly.
You said it.
Who's next?
That kid across the street, Teeny. Come on. This package is from some doll company. Maybe if we twist her arms, she'll sign.
Ring the bell, dearie. I hope this one is right.
Don't worry. I'm bigger than Teeny is, and she'll take this package if I have to beat her over the head with it.
Hi, mister. Hi, Miss McGee.
Package for you, sis.
Hello, Teeny.
Sign right here, and we'll be on the way.
Oh, boy. Gee, come in, mister. We've been waiting for you all day.
Well, I got no time to come in, Teeny. I'm busy, and I'm beat.
Oh, gee, mister. Did you forget what day this is?
What you mean?
This is the day me and Kenny and Buddy and Ratty and Johnny always sing the night before Christmas for you.
Oh, well, now, don't start crying, sis. With a little push, I'll cry myself. I'm bushed, wore out, pooped, disgusted, and no mood for music. How I ever got into this mailman racket, I'll never understand.
And neither does the post office, McGee, but it won't happen again.
Huh?
Why, it's the postmaster, McGee.
I've been watching you all day, McGee, breaking regulations.
Huh?
This woman has been going around with you, hasn't she?
Certainly I have. I've been going around with him since 1918. And if my folks couldn't stop me then, no stranger's going to stop me.
Hush. What are you going to do, master?
Thing I can do, McGee. You're discharged. As of now, I'll take your packages.
You know something, Bud?
What?
That's the nicest thing that's been said to me all day.
Yes, and a very Merry Christmas to you, too, sir.
Help yourself to the packages, Bud. Oh, boy, do I feel wonderful. Teeny, boys, go ahead and sing.
Creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hope that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled all warm in their wee little bed, while visions of
to see what was the matter. All the way through the window, I flew like a flash, never opened the shutters, threw open the sash.
Then,
But to my wandering eyes could appear on a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick that I knew right away that it must be St. Nick. A bundle in fur from his head to his foot, old Santa was covered with ashes and soot. I drew in my head and was turning around when down the chimney he came with a bow.
His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow. The beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
The stump of a little pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke went round and round and round his head like a wreath. He was so choppy and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed, and I laughed, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed. Like a ball of jelly. Oh, oh, he gave me a wink of his eye and a twist of his head. A chuckle and a smile I knew all the while I had nothing to dread.
He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings.
Oh, boy.
Then turned with a jerk.
Laying a finger aside of his nose and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his feet, gave a whistle, and away they all flew out of the snow. But I heard him exclaim that he rose.
Transcribed. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.